Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI expresses his sorrow after the recent conflicts and tensions that have flared up again in Jerusalem. As Pope Benedict celebrates Mass in memory of Pope John Paul II's death 5 years ago, a well-known papal biographer and newspaper columnist shares his memories of the much-loved pontiff. Film critic Peter Malone speaks about a film of awakening and communication between fathers and children. And Father Jim Brand looks ahead to the ordeals Jesus went through during Holy Week for the love of us all. Benedict XVI has expressed his sorrow over the recent conflicts and tensions that have occurred again in Jerusalem. The Pope was speaking during his weekly Angelus address in St. Peter's Square that followed his Palm Sunday Mass. Charles Collins has this report.
In questo momento, il nostro pensiero, il nostro cuore si dirigono in modo particolare a Gerusalemme.
The Pope said he was deeply saddened by the new tensions and conflicts in Jerusalem. He called the city, which is home to Christians, Jews, and Muslims, a prophecy and promise of the universal reconciliation that God desires for the whole human family. Speaking in St. Peter's Square, he said peace is a gift that God entrusts to human responsibility. To cultivate it through dialogue and respect for the rights of all, reconciliation and forgiveness. Earlier, during his homily for Palm Sunday Mass, the Pope spoke about his own pilgrimage to Jerusalem last year, saying that for Christians, such a physical trip can be a useful element for that far greater journey to the heavenly Jerusalem. He said a pilgrimage to the Holy Land helps show faith in Jesus Christ is not an invention of legend. It's based on a story that really happened. The Holy Father said visiting the actual sites of the life of Jesus can be spiritually moving, and said following the exterior paths of Jesus must help us to walk with greater joy and with a new inner certainty those interior paths he has shown us and has walked himself. Palm Sunday is also Diocesan World Youth Day, and the journey of Jesus to Jerusalem was the central theme of Pope Benedict's homily. He called on young people to follow Jesus, who walks ahead of us and goes upward. The Holy Father said the path of Christ is an ascent to the true height of being human. He said man can choose a convenient way and avoid any hardships. He can also descend into the vulgar. He can sink into the morass of lies and dishonesty. But Jesus helps us in our path, giving us strength in the sacraments and binding us to him through the Church. At the end of the Mass, he spoke to English-speaking pilgrims.
I greet all the English-speaking pilgrims and visitors at St. Angelus, especially the young people present who are celebrating the 25th World Youth Day. Today we also begin Holy Week, the Church's most intense time of prayer and reflection, by recalling Jesus' welcome into Jerusalem by the children. Let us make their joy our own by welcoming Christ into our lives, our hearts, and our families.
Pope Benedict ended the celebration by reciting the Angelus for the last time before Easter. I'm Charles Collins.
Thanks there to Charles Collins for that report. And on Monday evening, the papal schedule sees Pope Benedict XVI presiding at a mass in memory of his predecessor, Pope John Paul II, 5 years from his death. I must admit I was wondering why the Mass, celebrated in St. Peter's Basilica, wasn't going to be held on the actual date of the Pope's death. That's April the 2nd. I asked around and soon found out that it's because this year, April the 2nd, falls on Good Friday, a liturgical feast. It also wasn't very hard to think of the right person to speak to in remembering John Paul II.
Marco Politi, papal biographer and columnist for Il Fatto Quotidiano.
You were the obvious person to turn to in remembering John Paul II. Time goes by and memories do blur a little bit. Details, they kind of get lost. But some things do stand out. What would you say stands out in particular when we think back to the legacy of John Paul II?
The more the time goes by, the more people concentrate on the essentials. I would even say it is not so important when and how Pope Wojtyla will be proclaimed saint, because already in the public opinion all over the world, he is one of the great personalities of the 20th century and of the beginning 21st century. In this sense, he is already Wojtyla the Great.
He has succeeded, Marco said, in transforming the role of the Catholic Pope into being not only important for Catholics or for Christians, but for the world scene.
He has transformed the papacy into a spokesman for human rights. He has brought the Roman pontiff to advocate religious dialogue, cultural dialogue, and to be very clear on the issues of a human face globalization and on the issue of war and peace. When the Bush administration decided to wage war onto Iraq, Pope John Paul II didn't just make some speeches very in general against the war, but he really mobilized the Vatican on a diplomatic level in order to avoid the war. He sent a secret message to President Bush, then he sent special envoys to Bush and to Saddam Hussein, then he organized meetings of all the papal nuncios. And when he realized that it was not possible to stop the war, he, in any case, made it very clear that the Vatican was against the war. Absolutely.
This background, Marco explained, allows us to understand why countries like Chile and Mexico voted against the Iraq invasion at the UN Security Council, depriving the Bush administration and the Blair government of an outright majority.
So, on all these levels, peace, justice, religious dialogue, and advocacy of human rights, and at the same time, a strong message of faith and of the importance of faith in the modern world, John Paul II will not be forgotten.
At the same time, Marco continued, there was John Paul's extraordinary capability of being in constant contact with people.
To find contact with people and with masses also of non-believers. I'll never forget at the Lake Genezareth, when I was with the Pope in the year 2000, the Pope was holding a speech to the youth in Israel, and near me was an Israeli policewoman. And I asked her, "What do you think about this Pope?" And she answered me, "I absolutely don't care about the Catholic Church." And she said it also in a tone of a sort of despise. But, she added, "He's a man of God."
Yes, that's probably what my strongest memory is, of a man of great humanity, someone with whom I could certainly have felt comfortable with, even in the most ordinary of circumstances.
He was absolutely able to find contact, especially to the normal men. He spoke a lot to the journalists, but this was business. Actually, we felt that he was not so much interested in us, just in conveying the message. But when he took the hand of one believer along the street, he really focused on this man, and this man felt that the Pope was speaking to him. And even when he spoke to great crowds, every single listener felt directly touched by his word. There was also something physical. Once I hid myself in Riga, in Letland, I hid myself in the crowd to give him the hand, to see how it was physically. And his hand was very warm and was really conveying a personal fluid of being near to the people.
Now, how many years did you travel and work close to John Paul II? And did he recognize you? Did he know who you were?
I began to travel with him since the first trip to Mexico in the year 1979, his first international trip. And up to now, I made more than 80 international trips, both with Pope John Paul II and Benedict XVI. He, of course, knew every one of us journalists who were following in the trips, and he had a very nice habit, which was to come to the part of the plane where journalists were sitting and then to walk slowly along the aisles in order to give to every one of us the possibility to ask a question. So in every international trip, generally it was four trips in a year, there were 20, 25 journalists who could ask directly the Pope a question without any filter, without any censorship.
Do you mean the questions you used to ask John Paul II, he didn't know them beforehand?
No, he didn't know them beforehand. He didn't absolutely care to know them beforehand. And he was ready to answer even questions which could be politically hot. For instance, I remember when he flew to Cuba, there was one journalist of Latin America who asked him, "What do you think about Che Guevara?" And he answered, "Now he is in front of the trial of God, but I think he cared very much about the poor." So he, in the same time, he was very direct, very spontaneous, but also very subtle from a political point of view in his answers.
And why did you choose to write a book about John Paul II?
Well, it was by chance, because I was working already at the time of the conclave when John Paul II was elected. Then I followed him in all his trips to Poland. And then my newspaper, which was then Il Messaggero, sent me to Moscow as Moscow correspondent. And so I could see from the other side of the Iron Wall the impact of the pontificate of John Paul II in Eastern Europe. And when I came back from Moscow and began to write for La Repubblica, I met Carl Bernstein, and we both decided to write a biography of John Paul II, which eventually became a great bestseller both in Europe and in the Americas.
And this, Marco reminded me, is not the only book he has dedicated to the figure of Pope John Paul II.
Later on, when he died, I was touched by the great participation of the people in Rome, in Italy, and from all over the world in the last days of John Paul II, how they followed him when he was ill. And this was another special characteristic of John Paul II. He had been known all over the world as a strong athlete of God, the sportsman of God. And later, when he became ill and the Parkinson was going on and on, he didn't hide himself within the Vatican like it was a custom in the past, but he transformed his ill body into a message. And the message was, I am suffering like Christ was suffering, so I take part in the passion of Christ, and I don't resign because also Christ can't come down from the cross. But in the same time, showing my suffering, I remember that all over the world there are suffering people, and these suffering people have a great dignity. So I share with them this dignity, and I communicate to all the world that suffering is something with great dignity and which is important to think over. So many people was following his last days, and when he died, there were in St. Peter's Place not only Catholics, non-believers, Christians, Jews. I remember a Muslim woman who came and put her veil down on the earth and to begin to pray like they do in Islamic countries. And later on, when in the Vatican Basilica they showed his corpse, there were more than 3 million people who came. I am always very cautious with figures, but it was really 3 million people who made long queues. And I came also during the night, and there was this great river of people almost standing, because they could move 5 steps only every quarter of an hour. But they wanted just to have a last glimpse of this personality. And so many children wrote also on little pieces of papers, which were put on the columns of Bernini Colonnade, "Ciao Papa," "Goodbye Daddy," or "Goodbye Grandpa."
And now it's over to my friend, film critic Peter Malone, who heads the film office at Cygnus, the World Catholic Association for Communication. Today he talks about a film of awakening and communication between fathers and children. It stars a convincing Robert De Niro in a sort of a road movie, which is never too emotional to be uplifting. Everybody's Fine, with Robert De Niro.
Yes, people have been criticising both Robert De Niro and Al Pacino in recent years, suggesting that in a lot of their films they're almost caricatures of the characters that they played in the past. Of course, with Al Pacino playing Scarface almost 30 years ago, it was a caricature in itself. But Robert De Niro, people argue whether he has a sense of humour or not, and whether he got all the jokes in the Meet the Fockers and Meet the Parents films or not. But whatever that be, I was very pleased to see him in Everybody's Fine.
Excuse me, I just want to get some expensive bottles of wine. I want to make a good impression on my children.
This isn't for children.
Because I thought he gave a much more relaxed and subdued performance and made me appreciate what a good actor he can be.
That's nice to hear. Let's tell our listeners a little bit what the story's about.
Well, I should say, first of all, it's a remake of an Italian film called Everybody's Fine, which is the title of the American film, Stanno Tutti Bene.
Right. Did you see the Italian film?
A long time ago, yes. It was directed by Giuseppe Tornatore just after he had such success with Cinema Paradiso.
Right, with Marcello Mastroianni.
Yes, Marcello Mastroianni and now Robert De Niro. So I suppose icons of Italian cinema and now American cinema. The story's fairly straightforward, and I would think a lot of people will identify with Robert De Niro's character and maybe with the children that he goes to visit. His wife has died. He's pottering around the garden, which he likes, by himself, managing, but he wants all his children to come to visit him and have a reunion. And, of course, one by one, they phone and say they can't come.
Dad, I can't get away this weekend.
I'm sorry, Dad.
We're not going to be able to make it this weekend.
So he decides to surprise them and go and visit each of them.
They all cancelled on me on the last minute, so now I'm going to surprise them.
So It becomes a bit of a road film across America because one son lives in New York City.
What do you think of my work? You've been looking at it ever since we left the station.
Through wire?
I ran 1,000 miles of wire a week, nonstop. All for my children. Million feet of wire to get them where they are today.
A daughter, played by Kate Beckinsale, lives in Chicago with her family.
Oh, my gosh.
Look at you.
Come on, Ingrid.
Oh, it's got a handle.
Of course it's got a handle.
I can't believe it.
Then he goes to Denver, Colorado, where Sam Rockwell is meant to be a conductor, or so his father thinks.
Surprise.
What are you doing here?
I came to spend some time with my son, the conductor.
But he just plays the timpani and lives a quiet life. Mm-hmm. And then finally to the other daughter, played by Drew Barrymore, who lives in Las Vegas.
Hi, Dad.
This is where you live?
No, this is an elevator.
Very good.
And he thinks she's an important dancer, which we realise that not everybody's fine at all. Mm. She isn't.
So everybody's fine? Of course not.
Of course not. And it's his discovery gradually of what their actual lives are like.
Never said I was conducting that.
But because he's been a perfectionist when they were young, making demands on them all the time, which has alienated them a bit. And they used to confide in their mother rather than in him.
I don't know what it is with you kids. You always told your mother everything. You never told me anything.
We tell you the good news and spare you the bad.
Tell me the bad news as well as the good news from now on.
And so it's a journey of awakening for him, an opportunity finally to understand his children and relate with them.
Mom used to say, make your dad proud. And I know you're not proud of me.
It's not true.
Yes, I can imagine that many people will be able to relate to that very easily.
Sometimes I pick up the phone to dial her number, and then I remember.
Keep calling next time. The number's still the same, and I'm still on the other end.
Okay.
I think so, and some people thought it was too sentimental, but I thought that it played the emotions fairly well, and I think for most audiences going to see it, that they will be drawn into one or other of the characters, and Robert De Niro, being such a charismatic presence, will easily lead them into the film.
I want to get us all around the same table.
Like we used to at Christmas.
Together, everybody together.
Okay. With more than a touch of humour as well, from what I understand.
Yes, he's a bit of a klutz at times, which doesn't seem quite right because he seems a self-possessed person, but he has various accidents and he's just terrible when he has to finally fly home. You'd think the plane was going to crash instantly and he was going to be sick at the same time. So, yes, there are some lighter moments along the way.
As long as you were happy, I'd be proud of you no matter what you did.
Really?
Really.
Okay.
That was Peter Malone, head of the film office at Cygnus, the World Catholic Association for Communication. And now Father Jim Brand offers another of his Lenten meditations. Today he looks ahead to the ordeals Jesus went through during Holy Week for love of us all.
Hello, it's Father Jim. It's Monday in Holy Week. We're going through the terrible ordeal that Jesus went through for love of his friends. His Last Supper, his abasement, his disgrace of the cross, and then his raising from the dead. Years ago, there was a very moving program on the television about a man, I think in Mississippi, who'd been condemned to death. And we followed him for the last 2 weeks of his life before he was gassed. And I remember being very cut up. He was allowed to have his last supper. And his mother was there, who was a police officer, and his old grandmother, all with their beautiful little hats, and his sisters, and they all prayed together and sang hymns. And then he was allowed to choose what he had for his last supper. And then it was time for them to leave. And then you saw him being taken to the holding cell while they practiced the gas chamber on a rabbit. And then the editor, the program producer, gave him a hug and took his leave and thanked him. Meanwhile, The kindly Wharton, as far as one could be kind, was saying, did you enjoy your shrimp for your supper? Anyhow, he was gassed. And then, later, apparently, a woman turned up and gave him an alibi. He couldn't have done the murder. And apparently she'd been told to mind her own business when she mentioned this. And so it seems an innocent man, after his last supper, was killed. And this put me in touch with the Lord, who was heartbroken at having to leave his friends. Here's a little psalm for Maundy Thursday, when our Lord had his last supper. It's by Joseph Bailey. Tonight, Lord Jesus Christ, you sat at supper with your friends. It was a simple meal, that final one of lamb, unleavened bread and wine. Afterward, you went out to die. How many other meals you shared beside the lake, fried fish and toasted bread at Simon's banquet hall, a feast at Lazarus' home in Bethany, the meal that Martha cooked on mountain slope where you fed the hungry crowd at close of tiring day. Please sit with us tonight at our small meal of soup and rolls and tea. Then go with us to feast of bread and wine that you provide. Because afterward, you went out to die. So I hope we'll all have the opportunity to walk with the Lord on Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, and be watching for his rising on Easter Sunday morning. I'm always very moved when Mary Magdalene, whatever Mary it was, went to the tomb and found it empty. And she saw what she thought was the gardener and asked where he'd laid the body of the Lord. And the gardener said, Mary! And she recognized him and said, Lord, Rabboni. The risen Christ, remember, calls us all by name, Jem. He's the Lord of the living, not of the dead. So in prayer next Easter Sunday, let the risen Lord call you by name. Mary Magdalene had a history. We all have a history. But he comes back to us always, whatever we've done, wherever we've been. And he calls us by name. Samuel, Mary, Jim. Listen to your name, and when you hear your name, say, Speak, Lord, your servant is listening. Amen.
That's all from the English Feature Programme today, and from me, Linda Mordoni. But we will be back at the same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.